Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Welcome to the Seminary Explorers. My name is Nelson Strober, and my guests today, well, there are really two guests today. I have Dr. E. Jean Hopper and Dr. Winifred Washington. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers.
It's our pleasure. Good morning.
And these two are our special guests because they are retired professors of education as well as retired superintendents from the state of Ohio. Well, we welcome you to the Seminary Explorers. And to just get into our conversation, I'd like to ask you to discuss in some way, some small way, what you see as the challenges for public education in the United States. Both of you have spent years in the education field, and I think you might have something to say to our listening audience.
For me, I think the major problem or the major challenge is student achievement, and it's the achievement of all of the students, those who are gifted to those with disabilities and all in between.
In fact, you know, one of the things I think that is most significant is that a quality education is a right for every child, regardless geographically where they live. And that is the challenge we face. We have great educational programs occurring. However, it's not equity for all children, and the programs are not occurring everywhere. So that's one of the challenges, as you say, the academic side. But I would also say that another challenge is finding and keeping qualified and competent teachers that are able to provide the necessary education for our children to meet the new academic necessities, to meet today's needs.
You talk about the disparity between students. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Well, if you look at the student achievement, which is measured in test scores, and you look at the urban school student testing,
yes,
then you're going to find a huge disparity. Now, what does that have to do with? Does it have to do with intellect? I don't think so. What it has to do with is the quality of the kind of education that they are getting. And I think one of the real issues is that we are so frightened of testing. And I think the teachers are frightened of it, and they're weary of it, because I really don't think that there is a clear understanding of what a standards-based curriculum and instruction is all about. And so I think there are just a number of misunderstandings that we have in our profession that leads to the lower achievement for particularly African Americans students.
And there's another issue, especially in the state of Ohio, school funding. When we talk about inequity, we've passed so many times legislation that suggests that it's illegal, our present system of funding schools. There is no secret. In the urban areas, the children are receiving far less economic support than you would find in some of the suburban areas. There is a disconnect between the type of education they are receiving, because not only are they not getting the resources, and they don't have enough of the materials, and they don't have the experiences. Some of the children in the urban settings are never allowed to travel or get outside of their communities. They get a lot of love and care from those teachers, but the teachers don't have the resources. And that funding situation, where you have some schools that have an abundance of funds and they can provide the extra resources, and you have other schools that simply barely have books. That's where inequity comes
right
in.
And just a clarification,
yes.
In Ohio, taxes are levied and citizens have to vote on whether or not they want to expend additional funding on education. Well, in every community, that's not the case. And we are having more and more senior citizens who are on fixed incomes and who don't want to pay extra taxes. I paid for my children. Now it's time for someone to pay for their own children.
Right.
And so we still, but that's the system that we have. In other places around the country, a board of education can levy a tax when they need it.
Right.
So there, that funding issue that she talked about is huge.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think another challenge is also the fact that everybody think all the answers are within the school. It's everybody's responsibility. Everybody's a stakeholder in educating our children.
Well, I hear that, and yet so time and time again, throughout the nation, on the news media, teachers are really put down.
Yeah.
They have studied, worked for certification, etc., mm-hmm. and the fault comes to the teachers. And, do you hear that? Have you heard that?
Well, there is research that says that the teacher is the most important factor in student achievement. But we shouldn't be about blaming people. We need everyone to come together. It's not like more my problem than it is your problem. I mean, we need to have families involved in their children's education. And we need to welcome them into the school. And we need to make sure that they feel as though we are equal partners in this process.
I would even take it a step further. Mm-hmm. I think families are critical because they establish expectations for their children in schools.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily have to know all of the strategies for their children. I think we have a responsibility as educators to make them aware and to keep them abreast. But we are the ones that are perpetually learning. It's lifelong learning for us. But those families and the expectations mm-hmm. for their children, that's key. But not only the families. You need your churches, your businesses. You need your hospitals. Do you
very
know?
Very good. Very good. Yeah, but, okay, but how do you do that? I mean, I hear this, the involvement of community agencies, community organizations. Do you have any suggestions for how that can be done?
Well, let me just talk about partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
Partnerships mean that we both have mutual interests. Mm-hmm. I can tell you my needs and my children's needs for mm-hmm. the school district,
right.
but I can't just do mental health. For example, that's what you have, or we can't do everybody else's program in our schools because we have a standards-based curriculum. So that's the thing. I think we have to realize that what we are doing in schools is educating students, and that which means that if they in Ohio, if you do not pass third grade reading, you are not promoted to the fourth grade. So learning becomes the primary focus. And so you have to come to us as a partner in our primary focus. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
The school is the place where people get discouraged. Outside agencies get discouraged sometimes because they want to do their program. But we cannot be taken off the mission.
No.
So I think now that I'm outside of the school, I will say to people who say, I want to help the schools. Well, look at the school's goals. Look at the curriculum. How can you enhance that curriculum that they're doing in the school? That's how we can help.
Yes, it's not a new or an additional curriculum.
Exactly.
It all has to be part of the same curriculum.
Right.
And everybody has to remember, the thing that bothers me most is that we don't understand the value of the children. America's children are the strength of our country. The education they receive will determine where our country's future will go.
Very
so this is
so,
no yeah. longer just an issue of teachers. And you can't blame teachers. This is everybody's part and responsibility to engage with the schools. And you say business and industry? Well, my goodness, those are the actual field experiences. You have young people that can go out and see. There are things we cannot teach in the school. We can talk about them.
Right.
But only through field experiences. So the resources that Dr. Mm-hmm. Harper is referring to, mm-hmm. social agencies, we need their expertise and their talent and support, but not in addition to what we're doing. We need it to be blended into our curriculums.
Right. So, I mean, so we're talking service learning.
Yes,
for example. Service,
right, which goes on in higher ed, and you're saying it needs to go through the K-12
education. Absolutely. So, but there's nothing that helps retention more than doing. You know?
Right.
And so we can talk and teach in the abstract all right. we want, but what we need to reinforce that with are some real life experiences that students can really see in action, and it
yes.
becomes a part of them. You see the application.
Right.
And that's so important. Actually, children today, they're into technology, they're on their cell phones, they're listening to fast music. Our schools have to be able to keep their attention, to get their interest, to motivate them, to inspire them. Our teachers have to be able to develop new strategies. If a child hasn't learned, a teacher hasn't taught. So we have to shift this. The test scores aren't reflective of what the children have learned. The test scores are reflective of an organization that is failing, that there is no systemic way of getting from what we want to see as outcomes and what we're actually providing for the children.
Mm-hmm.
If you test the child on something that you haven't taught them, then it's impossible
right.
for them to learn.
Exactly. Now, we hear a lot of criticism of public education, mm-hmm. urban education, et cetera, but I'd like to know whether you have any stories of success of where children have benefited from their education.
Well, I could use myself as an example. I am a product of public education from kindergarten through PhD.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and so there are lots of people out there like us who have gone through public education. You know, I've never been to a private school. And we have students that go to West Point or any of the military academies. We have folks who go to Ivy League schools. We have people who, who come back. Well, in my school district, for example, John Legend is a, he is a graduate of my school district.
Okay.
And, but there are all kinds of people who came through public education.
Right, but we don't hear those successes very often, or it's submerged, or and not highlighted.
The squeaky wheel gets all the attention.
That's true.
And that,
true.
And you know, we talk about the challenges and the lack of success. Mm-hmm. I doubt if there's any urban school district anywhere in the country that can't pull out for you things to be proud and share with you some of the accomplishments they make. In fact, there are books that have been written just to give you examples of how to go about developing successful programming from urban school districts.
Mm-hmm.
We don't hear about it, but it's out there.
Okay.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we don't control the media.
Pardon? No, we don't.
We don't control the media.
No, that's
media
that's very
and,
true.
And bad news travels fast.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and we have a lot of uninformed people as well.
Yeah.
But I would say there are programs in urban schools that would rival suburban schools.
And I also would say on the charter school side, mm-hmm. you ask another question.
What is it? Well, could you share with me, what is a charter school for our listening audience?
Well, let's just understand that there is no competition if you are public school and charter school and you're all doing an exceptional job. Charter schools evolved almost like unions because people needed choices. They didn't feel that some of their schools were providing what was needed for their child.
Mm-hmm.
So they went to other types of educational learning, and charter schools started evolving as non-public schools. And people tend to think that they're better or that there's a rivalry between charter schools and public schools. I don't necessarily believe that's true. If you have excellent quality education in your school, you won't have to worry about your children attending. There are great charter schools, and then there are schools that have just sprung up because it's the latest ice cream flavor.
These
schools are not necessarily under the same microscope. And as the smoke is clearing, the accountability for these schools are showing that they're not all of what they are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
But public education is everybody's right. And choice should also be everyone's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think of it as a big pie. There's enough room out there for the best in everything if we're all doing a good job.
Which says something about the American educational systems. Ooh. That, you know, the choice and viability of alternatives.
Well, and what we do that many of our other nations do not do,
right,
is that we want to educate all of the children.
Sure.
Not just a certain percentage of the children, you know, and that, you are testing out and going to the next level. You know, that's not what's happening in America, and we never want that to happen in America.
Okay.
I mean, we want to be able to educate all of the children, and we want to be able to do it better.
Well, you know, that brings up another topic or another issue, and that is the role of the federal government in education. And I hear the government, the federal government has too much say in public education, and shouldn't that be the role of the state government? You know,
if there weren't federal programs, a lot of children would still be in basements. When public law 94-142 came out from the federal government, it made it possible for children with varying disabilities to have education as the rest of our children. That's what makes our nation so unique. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in some of the other nations, and they like to compare American education to education in other countries in the world, and they're quick to say that our children can't read and can't write, but what they don't understand is that many nations have the option of selection. They can determine which children are going to be educated, which children are going to have careers. In our country, every child stands a chance, and whether they have disabilities or not, we want them to learn and be the best possible person that they can be. We want them to be viable citizens in our country. The federal government made it possible for us to provide appropriate services for these children. The federal government made it possible to feed children that were hungry. You can't teach a child if they are hungry. Absolutely, we need to be working cohesively, state and federal government. We need to be on the same page. There are problems with some of the interaction because legislators who legislate things that we have not been trained on. They don't comprehend that there is a process of implementation,
mm-hmm,
and they want it to happen yesterday when we need to gradually teach people, prepare people, and work it in. But I don't think the question is whether or not we should have federal involvement. We have to have federal involvement for those that are not able to provide this for themselves.
Okay. You know, it's hard to believe, but we're coming to the close of our conversation. And I'd like to ask you, when we talk about education and people looking vocationally, in terms of education, what advice might you give to young people considering or people changing careers who might consider going into the education field?
I think going into education was absolutely the best decision I ever made. And I've had a 40-year career. And
it's a long time.
It's a long time. And it just keeps getting better because there are more things that we can do. There are, I'm still just as excited about education now as I was when I first entered. And it is my passion. It is my personal sense of mission. Education is still the great equalizer. And my final one, I'll let I could talk, but I guess what my other thing here would be that if we could all respect each other as educators, those of us who are seasoned as well as those who are coming out, because we have something to share. And together, you know, you can teach me all about technology, and I can teach you all about how it is to interact with people, because there are sometimes you need to talk to them.
And okay. I just want to add to that point. I want people to comprehend out there, education is not a dumping field. We want the brightest and the best. We want the passionate. We want those who are servants that can come out and are thrilled to be part of this environment. We want people to know those challenges that we talked about earlier, though they exist, they've always existed in education. The history of education, they will always exist in the future of education, because as our world changes, as our country changes, so will the schools. And we need young people who are committed, who can come out and make these changes happen.
Well, I can't believe our time has run out, but you certainly have talked about a lot of issues. And one final word before you go. Very quickly.
Well, I just want to say for those young people and especially the new leaders coming, just know that there will be something coming in the near future. We're preparing a book that hopefully will help us deal with that void between training and successful practice, and help both leaders and future superintendents deal with change and the changing world. It should be out in the near future.
Okay. Very good. I can't believe our time has run out, but I want to thank Dr. E. Jean Harper and Dr. Winifred Washington, retired professors of education, as well as retired superintendents of school systems, for being on the Seminary Explorers. Thank you. For the Seminary Explorers, this is Nelson Strobert. Have a good day.
We thank you.
Yes.
You have been listening to the Seminary Explorers from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.